Hello, and welcome to this month's Joy Wine and Food Pairing. I am Mindy McNeil. I am joined in studio by Carolyn Joy of Joy Wine and Spirits. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Mindy.
Hi. And I am also joined by Jason of GQ Barbecue out in Broomfield. Jason, welcome.
Hi, Mindy.
Hi. Carolyn knows, because I always say this, I'm not a big meat eater, but you have brought some amazing things today. It looks like some ribs, macaroni and cheese, and garlic mashed potatoes. Is that correct?
Yes. So we got some pork spare ribs, and that's okay. Mindy, we have a lot of people that come in that, believe it or not, are vegetarians,
okay,
but they only cheat when they're in our restaurant.
Okay.
So you're not alone. That's okay.
Don't report me, no.
So we got the pork spare ribs, and then we have some garlic, baby red skin mashed potatoes, and then we have some white American mac and cheese.
And, evil man, you brought bourbon cheesecake, is that correct?
Bourbon cherry cheesecake.
And I know you did bring two different types of sauces to go, because you have is it a dry rub on here? Because I'm... Actually, if you could kind of school me a little bit, I'm good at eating the barbecue and eating the mac and cheese and everything, but I'm not an expert on how you grill. I'm not a grill master. Yeah.
That's so. Okay. I'm good at eating the barbecue as well,
okay,
also, so that's fine. So the spare ribs we cook over hickory wood. I get it all trucked in from eastern Kansas. It's all pesticide-free. I think that kind of stuff matters. The wood is the most important ingredient, one of the most important ingredients with barbecue, so we make sure you got really good wood. So we smoke those guys for anywhere between 4 to 5 hours, and then we pull them off, and they are put, we do have our dry rub, our house dry rub that we put on all of our meats. The rub is the same rub I've been using in competitions for the last probably 7 or 8 years. It's been battle-tested time and time again. We then, after the ribs are done, we glaze them with what we call our championship glaze, which is a sweet kind of brown sugar based glaze. So they have like a little bit of sweetness that I think really contrasts nicely with the salty, spicy rub that we put on the ribs.
Well, and that's really good, because the thing too that I always notice with ribs is that sometimes they can be kind of tough, and this is very tender. And so is it is it because it's the pig, or is it the way you roast it or baste it or grill it?
So, I mean, the pig is important, right? But cook time. So if it doesn't cook long enough, that's what keeps it tough. So cooking at the right amount of time, it should be more tender. If they cooked a little bit longer, they would be even more tender. A lot of people always talk about that fall off the bone texture. That's what people are looking for. But we actually try to cook them to where they have a little bit of tug. I find personally that when they come fall off the bone, they're kind of chewy. It's kind of like a horse with hay, just kind of chewing on them a little bit. Sure, they're very tender, but they're a little drier that way. So if you can get them to the point where they just have to require a little tug off the bone, they tend to be more pleasurable when chewing and swallowing, in my opinion.
Okay. And then, of course, too, I'm a garlic fiend. So you've got garlic. Well, there's a place in California, when I lived there for a little bit, it's called the Stinking Rose, and everything is garlic.
Nice.
So there's garlic ice cream, mashed potatoes,
wow,
everything on the menu, except for the drinks. Maybe they've got
that
garlic.
That sounds kind of nasty.
Yeah.
Maybe martini.
Yeah, I know, garlic martini. But everything's garlic. And so, of course, I'm like, oh, I saw on the menu, I'm like, garlic mashed potatoes. So anything special that you, can you divulge a little bit, like what you put in there?
So it's baby red skin potatoes, little bit of cream, butter, and garlic. So very, very, very simple. It's just good ingredients done right. And we also try not to like overly smash the potatoes. So there should be a little bit of texture in there too. You should get some you know, mashed potatoes, but then also some pieces of the baby reds in there too.
Okay. And then white, you said, so is this white cheddar on the mac and cheese, or
yeah,
how
so we
are
make
we...
a bechamel sauce, right? And then we put a white American cheese in there. So it's a white American mac and cheese with elbow macaroni.
Okay. And so, okay, we've got bourbon cheesecake. So that just sounds bourbon cherry, bourbon cherry cheesecake. Carolyn, I know you brought something. Was that to complement the cheesecake, your red that you brought, or what was your thought?
Definitely not.
Okay.
This was the wine that I brought is meant to complement the ribs and the entire meal. The bourbon cherry cheesecake is a whole animal on itself. So I'm not even... We'll have to see how that works. Right now, I haven't tasted it because I want to savor all the flavors that I'm getting here and the food and the wine and the pairing of that. Yeah, the wine that I brought, though, I think definitely goes with the ribs and the potatoes and the mac and cheese, which is kind of interesting because you have all these different flavors, and frequently we do, and a lot of different textures. But one of the themes I think that's here is you have a certain amount of fat that comes through all of this with the cheese and the cream and then the fat on the ribs. So I wanted to get a wine. I think, you know, when I think of barbecue, sometimes I think of the sauce, and I think of either sweet or spicy. I don't usually think of that vinegar sauce, which would be really a challenging pairing with wine. So I generally think about this sweeter, thicker sauce. And I wanted to bring something that would have a little bit of acidity that would cut through that. And I don't think you normally think of Italian when you think of barbecue, because like jazz, barbecue is definitely American.
Yeah.
And so you would, you know, I would maybe do a Zinfandel a lot of times, but I attended a master class on Nero de Avila and specifically wines from the estate called Planeta. And I've been waiting for there to be a food that would match up to these wines. And I think this finally does.
And you know what, actually, and you know, Carol and I, Jason, I don't know if you've heard any of the other segments that she's had, but I'm like, where's my Moscato? But sometimes she brings some stuff and I'm like, wait a minute, you're kind of trying to change my palate a little bit. And so she brought the red and I'm kind of like, I'm going back again. So this is good. But, and you know, the funny thing though, Carolyn, like Jason and I were talking, you know, a little bit earlier about the kind of like the, you know, seasons, I guess, of, you know, grilling and, you know, and everything like that. But it's September, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, because people think, you know, Jason, it's only, you know, I'm only going to do my cookouts during the summer. I'm only going to, you know, have ribs or whatever, but you can still do this. It's, you know, after Labor Day, you can still do this even going into October, any time of the year, really, basically, right?
Absolutely. For all the barbecuers at home, I mean, here in Colorado and in Denver, we get 30-degree days in January and February, which are perfect for grilling. I mean, I grew up in the Midwest, and it would get really cold there, particularly with the wind chills. And, I mean, there's nothing better than on 10-degree days going out there and pulling hot barbecue off to satisfy your soul on those cold days. So I think any day of the year is a good day for barbecue and grilling.
So I have a question about that, because frequently I go out and I grill, and I also have a smoker that I'm sure doesn't even compare to yours, but it's still a smoker. And frequently it's in December, sometimes at Christmas, when I want to do something special, and it could be 0 degrees outside. How does that affect? I think it lowers the temperature of your grill then, obviously, right? So how do you compensate for that?
Or
your smoker?
It depends. I mean, we can get really geeky here if we want to, but it's going to depend on the insulation of the actual smoker or grill. And that's going to help maintain the grate temperature and the internal ambient temperature of your pit.
Actually, I do have a question. Can you get a little geeky? Because I like to know all of, like, kind of like the nuts and bolts. So
can you go there?
Or?
So most people at home wouldn't have any insulation on their grill or on their smoker, because you just have a metal covering.
Yeah, well, it just depends, that metal covering. It depends how high a quality that is, if it's stainless steel or what the pit is actually made out of. So your more expensive pits are going to hold temperature better. But nowadays, if you go way back, like what made a good pit master different from an average pit master is how well they can maintain the temperature of their pit. So if they want to set it and they want to cook at 225, they can throw on just the right amount of logs based on some of those factors we talked about, and the pit will maintain a 225 degree temperature. Nowadays, there's these devices that you can attach to your pit that will turn on a blower or a fan and regulate the temperature for you. So it takes a lot of that work out of it. I mean, real popular device right now that a lot of people are doing are these pellet grills called Traegers.
Yep.
And it's like the easy bake smokers. You just set the temperature and you're done. You don't have to worry about it. So a lot of that kind of stuff, a lot of the hard work is done for you now.
So is it more important, because I always thought it was about the smoke, but is it more about the temperature, and then you can add the smoke? Because I have one of those.
Yeah. Well, smoke is an ingredient, right? So with one of those pellet grills, you don't have any control over that, because it has an auger and it feeds the pellets into
that. So the smoke
that.
Is really low temperature.
Yeah.
And the higher temperature is seems like a little less smoke.
Higher temperature. Well, it's going to burn through pellets a little bit quicker. But you can get these other products to supplement that, or you would actually turn it down to a really low temperature to get more of that smoke in there.
Right.
When it's higher, it's going to feed the auger faster, so you're going to get less smoke into it.
Does it matter if there's a variance in the temperature? Like, let's say, you know, because you're trying to regulate the smoke, and so maybe you're starting out at a really low temperature and then you discover like it's dropping too much, and so you want to turn it up a little bit. Will it dry it out if you have those variances in temperature then, or should you try to maintain a certain temperature, or what's
some of the... So I teach people just one temperature the entire way through.
Okay.
However, when I'm competing, I cook at different temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very beginning, in order to get some smoke in there, I usually like to keep it a little lower. But once it gets later, and we need really, depending on the protein, right? So ribs, one temperature would be fine. But when you cook something like brisket or a pork butt, and it's got just a lot of that interstitial like fat in there, and you got to break that down, I want to plow through that. So I'll crank up the temperature later on in the cook to really get over that hump. Because if it sits there at a low and slow temperature, it's prone to drying out.
Yeah, and you want some of that crispy texture too, because you don't want it to steam.
Yeah, that's good too. I like the contrast in texture too. The nice, moist, soft meat on the inside, complemented by the crunchy bark on the outside, for sure.
I have a question. You've said this term twice, auger. What's an auger?
It's just what feeds that the pellet grills that we were talking about. It's what feeds those pellets in there. So in an old traditional, when people think of barbecue, they probably think of like logs. You got to feed the fire.
Yeah.
So when your fire burns out and your logs are done, you're left with the ashes. Somebody's got to go out there and put another log on the fire. With these pellet grills, they have an auger that just feeds the pit with pellets. So you fill this holding mechanism up with pellets, and then it just spits out pellets.
Okay. All right, because I was like, what is an auger? Okay, because this is pork, and then there's beef.
Yep.
So is there a different way that you would barbecue, you know, if you were doing beef ribs instead?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think they benefit from different flavors of wood. For people that are just out there in their backyard doing it, I think it's easier just to keep things simple. I think beef, I mean, it depends on the pit too, right? I mean, I think different pits like to cook at different temperatures. But for me, ribs 275 seems to be like an ideal temperature for me to cook ribs at. Whereas, like we talked about earlier with the brisket, I'm going to work that a little bit slower in the beginning to try to get some more smoke flavor in there, because it's such a massive protein that I think it benefits from that.
Is it good to have your meat dry? So, like, you don't want a marinade or a sloppy sauce on it to start. You just want it pretty dry?
Yeah, well, so smoke, believe it or not, I found that it sticks to moisture. So you'll see people that will go on there and they'll baste meats every hour or so just to get it wet. I don't think that does anything to keep the meat moist. What I do think is I think it allows the surface to have the smoke stick to it. And that does, I think, flavor the meat with a moist environment and a moist piece of meat.
Yeah, because it's nice, I think, to get that smoky flavor all the way through. Yeah,
that's why you're doing it, is to get that smoky flavor. Otherwise, you can just cook it in your oven or cook it on the stove or
liquid smoke.
Yeah, or you can use liquid smoke, right?
Liquid chemicals.
Well, here's the thing, though, is that, I mean, you could do a blind taste test, and people wouldn't be able to say, oh, that's liquid smoke versus real smoke. But yeah, it's not the same. I don't think it tastes nearly as good pumping a brisket full of liquid smoke and then serving it.
I'm sure most people don't even know what that is.
Barbecue people know. Yeah, I think barbecue, most people probably don't, but most barbecue people probably are familiar
with it. I think that's kind of an old ingredient.
Yeah, it's still in the supermarket. I mean, you'll still see it up there. Mm-hmm. And they have different flavors of it. And it's used in sauces. It's not just used in meat, but it's used in a lot of other stuff also.
But I think a good indication for me of barbecue and smoked meats is that the meat tastes really good and smoky without the sauce.
Without it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm eating these without the sauce.
And I did
and with the sauce.
Yeah, I did a little bit of both. I put like half on. And I took your suggestion because you brought two different types of sauces, and one was the sweet and one was heat, you know. And so what I did, you had said, you know, mix them together, and it is really good. Are these the only two sauces, though, that you carry for the ribs?
Yeah, we've got two other sauces in the restaurant. We've got an extra hot one that a lot of people come in and they think that spicy sauce that I brought today isn't hot. So we have a very hot one for them. And then we do a mustard sauce, too, for people that want that mustard flavor. But what's interesting about sauce is I'm from St. Louis originally, and more people consume more sauce per capita in St. Louis than any other city in the United States. And when I think of St. Louis barbecue, I just think of like really saucy barbecue, and that's what I kind of grew up on and ate. I'm 42 now. I ate most through my 20s, was just saucing everything. And as I'm getting older, I tend to like everything that just has a little bit of dry rub that's properly smoked. And it's just the meat, the smoke, and a little bit of seasoning without a lot of sauce on there. And that's a personal preference of mine, but it's interesting how it's changed over time.
Because I like sauces and everything else, but sometimes, you know, I've been to places or you know, or I've even done this, you oversauce it, so you kind of lose the flavor of whatever you're eating because you've just drowned it out, you know, in sauces. So
yeah, I see people that come in the restaurant and they'll put a half a bottle of sauce on their barbecue, and the meat is nothing more than just a vessel for their sauce. They're basically eating sauce for their meal, and they're just using a rib or a little pile of pork to just carry
spoon
that.
It up.
Yeah.
To their mouth. Okay, so now, Carolyn, I do have a question because, you know, of course, we're eating barbecue here. So my thought would have been like an ale or a beer. So what made you think red wine as well? I know you elaborated a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. So
I wanted to pick a wine because I think a lot of times you think of beer and barbecue. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily think of beer and wine. And I think that this pairing works really well. Like I said, you could have gone with something a little, it's kind of like the sauce. We could have gone with a really overwhelming or a real big, ripe, bold, alcoholic wine. It would kind of go along with the sauce. So if you're like a saucer person, go with that. But if you want something that's going to go with the meat and sort of complement this and cut through the fat and not be overwhelming, mm-hmm. I think that this Planeta Cerasuolo is a perfect complement to this meal. This is a Sicilian wine. So obviously when you think of barbecue, you think of like hot weather. And they don't necessarily have smoked meats or anything over there, but they definitely know something, a little something or about hot weather. There's a real diversity in Sicily. It goes from sea level to 3,000 feet. You go from very, very dry conditions, very hot conditions and windy to rather moist conditions. And they have very mountainous regions. They have Mount Etna, which has been kind of a darling of the wine world recently.
Okay.
But this area, I really like. This is a special area because there's some qualifications. Italy has come up with some designations, and they have something called DOC wine, and then they have DOCG wine, which is a step up from DOC. And so this is a guarantee of this, of a certain winemaking method, certain grapes. There's a tasting panel that goes into the DOCG wines. And so this is the only DOCG wine of Italy. It must be a certain blend of grapes. And the two grapes are Frappato and Nero di Avola. And a lot of people have heard of Nero di Avola. And that can be one of these kind of over-the-top wines. But when you mix it with Frappato, it becomes something that's a lot more graceful. I think I've mentioned on air before indigenous grapes. And I'm not sure if people know what I mean when I'm talking about that, but that's basically native grapes. So these are special grapes just native to the area. And so Sicily actually has about 71 native grapes, which is pretty amazing for that small area. And they've been known in the past as this big production area where they just produce bulk wine, Chardonnay, Merlot, Cabernet, really cheap. Mm-hmm. Or they use their big, bold wines to blend with wines from the north, either northern Italy or France, to kind of bulk up those wines and add structure and tannin, or make Marsala. So in the past, it's had a sort of sordid past, just like you can imagine, you know, Sicily and the mob.
Oh yeah,
basically it's had a sordid past. So Sicily in the last 20 years has come a long ways, and wine is one of those ways in which it's changing in leaps and bounds.
Oh, they even have their own names on the glasses. I thought this was
really
cute.
You know what? I forgot to mention that part of this master class was that they've now come, Riedel, a lot of people have heard of Riedel. They're a glass maker, and they make specifically shaped glasses for each different wine varietal. So they have, I don't know how many dozens of different wine shapes, but this is now today we get to drink out of the Nero di Avola glass. Because Sicily is counting on Nero di Avola, which is their most prominent grape, their most important grape, their most highly produced grape for right now, to make a real impact on the wine world.
All right.
And so they've paired up with Riedel to come up with a glass. So this glass is supposed to reflect what's best about this wine in terms of being able to smell it and taste it, like where it hits on your tongue and how you smell it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I saw the glasses and I'm like, oh, we're going fancy,
yeah, well,
Carolyn. I'm like, what's going on?
I don't have glasses for every varietal that we taste, but for this one, I do. Now, like I said, this wine is only, I think it's 60% Nero di Avola and it's 40% Frappato. And those are two totally different grapes.
Okay.
So Frappato is this grape that kind of reminds me of light and fresh and spring and strawberries and pomegranate and real easygoing. And then Nero de Avila, Nero meaning black, of this certain town, Avila, is dark, structured, tannic, bold. And so you blend these two together, and I think you come up with this sort of youthful wine that's really graceful and has a hint of smoke, a hint of tannin. There's never any new wood on this because it has so much tannin.
Okay.
And tannin, as we've talked about, competes with spice and competes with tomato, so I definitely didn't want to have too much tannin here.
Okay.
So it's a blend of those two grapes and no oak. I could go on and on about
no,
this
Carolyn,
wine.
That's great. I thought it was great. I loved how neutral it was. And I mean, it just would wash down all those flavors I had in my mouth, and it would allow me to recreate those with every single bite with no lingering, overpowering flavors.
Well, I think that's a great comment, because sometimes when I eat barbecue, there's so much smoke and such intensity of flavors. Like, I'm getting a full meal in just a few bites, and I mean, it's like overwhelming smoke. It's eating a lot. So I really like this wine in that you do after each bite and
it
a drink.
It. Yeah, I agree.
You clean out your palate and just come back for more. I've had a little bit more here than I probably normally would have, because I just think it tastes really good together. And also, I like it's a little bit lower in alcohol.
Less is more. So
that's right. Yeah, and it's exponential. So you know, 14% alcohol isn't just 1%. It's really a whole lot more than that.
Jason, before we end, your location, that's in Broomfield, is that correct?
We're in Westminster. If we were on the other side of the street, north or west, we would be in Broomfield.
That happened when I lived in Glendale. One side was Arapahoe County, the other side was Denver. So, okay, so you have your location in Westminster. Do you have any other locations?
Yeah, so we're at 120th and Sheridan up in Westminster, and we have construction underway for our second location down in Lone Tree in the outer rim there, Park Meadows Mall, next to Perry's Pizza, Brio, Sandia. And I'm also really excited to share that we're opening up a homemade ice cream shop right next door to the barbecue shop.
I know. Carolyn gets excited. My eyes are going, what? Okay, so it's a homemade ice cream,
you're saying? Yep, so we'll be making all the ice cream on the spot every single day and then scooping it to order.
Wow, and that's going to be, or that is where, or it's going to be where?
It's
going
to be right next door to GQ number 2 at Park Meadows Mall in Lone Tree.
Okay, great. So I kept messing it up. It's not in Broomfield. It is in Westminster. So since you are the owner, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so you're the owner.
Well,
so
I tell people Chase Bank owns the place. I just write the checks every single month.
You just do the legwork for Chase. There you go. So then you can give me the correct address, website, and telephone number.
Yeah, 5160 West 120th Avenue, Westminster, Colorado. But it is right there on the border of Broomfield and Westminster. And then the website is www.gqbarbecue.com. We're also on Instagram. We've got a YouTube channel, Facebook. And then I have a personal Instagram page I just started doing about a year and a half ago that I talk to all kinds of different customers on.
Great. Okay, so in Westminster. And Carolyn?
We're going to feature this. We're featuring this wine tonight.
Okay.
And we're also going to feature some other Sicilian gems.
Okay.
So come try it. There, like I said, there's a real diversity in those wines in terms of quality. And so don't let anything that you've had in the past, while it may have been good and decent and cheap, and this isn't expensive, but these are now wines that are sustainably grown, a lot of times organically grown, and really reflective of the different parts of Sicily. So come in and taste these native varietals and something different and great food wines and see what you think.
Great. Well, I just appreciate you both stopping by, and a nice little salute.